Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Philip Andre, Vice President at Obather North America. Philip, thanks for joining me today.
It's great to be with you again, Karen.
Let's talk a little bit about the healthcare industry, a little bit of a departure from our typical conversations about payments and financial services, but related for one very important reason, and that reason is the healthcare industry, like payments, like financial services, seems to be under attack by cyber criminals who want data, they want patient data, and they want to use it for very bad reasons. And so my first question for you is, what can the healthcare industry learn from our experiences here in payments and financial services?
Well, it's interesting that we talk about healthcare right now, given what's already happening on the Hill and some of the work that our people are doing with Congress to try to help them understand the issues that healthcare must address as we attempt to create a more secure environment that protects against these cyber criminals or cyber terrorists or cyber hackers that are playing games with us. The other interesting thing that I think we should note is when we look at fraud in the card payments industry and we compare that to fraud in one small section of the healthcare industry, payments fraud pales in insignificance. And yesterday I was talking with one of my colleagues and he was talking about $30 billion in fraud that we as citizens are responsible for covering through our taxes. So one begins to wonder, why did we address payments before we addressed healthcare? And when I think about your question, which is what can we learn from what we've done in payments and what can we learn from what people have done around the world in healthcare, is we can learn that what we need to do is we need to identify some way of addressing authentication of the patient being presented to the healthcare industry, be it a doctor, a hospital, a clinic, a pharmacist, or whatever. And when I think about the work that the Smart Card Alliance has been doing over the last several years in terms of developing white papers and having conversations with the likes of Booz Allen and the Department of Defense and the financial industry and ourselves, we all come to the conclusion that what is required is multi-factor authentication. That the most secure way of addressing multi-factor authentication is to give the patient something that they possess that is genuine, very much like we are doing with EMV by giving the cardholder a chip card that has a secret inside, that is a secret store that is capable of securing its identity, securing that that card is unique and genuine. So that's the first part of this thing. The second part has to do with data. And again, if we think about the target attack and we think about the fact that, yes, magstripe data, static data was captured by the criminal, we have to also remember that the criminal was able to access the system because they were able to fish for people's account numbers and passwords. So we think about the OPM attack that just happened, where that particular agency did not adhere to the principles that were established by our president after 9/11, where smart cards were introduced as a means of physical and logical access. So I think we all have to learn, and we're talking to people like Boeing, we're talking to healthcare providers down in Florida about introducing much more secure ways of protecting enterprise data, of protecting the data at rest. And yes, we can add tokenization to how we protect the data at rest. But when I think about PII data, am I going to tokenize all of the PII data and stick that up in the cloud? And then beg the question, how do I secure that thing in the cloud? I get back to the same problem. I need to secure access to those enterprise systems.
It's hard to know where to start. I mean, I agree that authenticating the patient is really critical, but then you have mountains of data that is just there for, you know, the hacking. I would say the taking, but it's the hacking, then the taking. And so, you know, when you talk to executives in retail, a lot of them say, I just don't want to deal with any of it. If it's never here, it's never in the clear, therefore I don't have to worry about it. I want to have it somewhere else. How do you think about where to start in healthcare, given you have two ends of a spectrum that are both critically important to protect?
Right. And when we began this dialogue, Karen, we were talking about how do we compare healthcare and payments. And in the beginning, I think both of us thought that that was something that made a lot of sense because they're both very strategic elements of our industry. While I began to do my research to better understand this environment, what I discovered is they are diametrically different, and they're different in a couple ways. In the first way, if we look at payments, we have two entities, Visa and MasterCard, who are able to dictate to the environment how that environment is going to operate. They can establish the rules that will govern how the merchant, the acquirer, the issuer, the cardholder are going to interact and how that data is going to be managed. On the healthcare side, we have multiple players. We have the payor, the insurance companies, Medicare, the state, the federal government. We have the care providers, the doctors, the hospitals, the clinics, the pharmacists, and we have the patient. And we need to figure out how do we get all of these people together. And it is a very large system, and it's not two entities sitting at the top of the pyramid. It's many entities. If you look state by state, we got 50 different states plus all of the regions that each run the Medicare, Medicaid systems within their very clear space. Then we've got how many insurance companies. We think about Blue Cross Blue Shield, which was originally one per state. And yes, we have some consolidation taking place, but we also have some new entrants coming into the market. So we've got hundreds of people who are responsible for issuing some identifier to the patient that will then be received by the care provider and then used to submit the claim. So we've got a very different ecosystem, a much more complex ecosystem. If we again compare payments, they were able to develop standards for the magnetic stripe. They were able to develop standards for the authorization and clearing systems because, again, there were a limited set of players who had to be brought around the table. We look at EMV that we're now deploying. It was only three people who had to meet to create that standard. Three executives sit down and say, shall we? Three executives say, yes, we will. Three executives dictating to their teams, yes, you will. Add the federal government, you now have Republicans and Democrats in the executive branch and the legislative branch and all of the other states that have all of their own internal politics. And you begin to wonder who's going to pull them all together and who's going to create that standard, that framework, that agreement that this is the right way forward.
I think we both know that the EMV situation certainly will be that simple. But I take the point that we do have Visa, MasterCard. They set the rules and the operating procedures, and that is the way it is done. And there isn't that analog in healthcare. But if we are on this path to this quote-unquote digital identity that is the set of patient credentials that then allows access to healthcare services, who is in the best position to be the Visa MasterCard of the healthcare system? Is there such a player, or is this an opportunity for a new player to emerge?
Well, let's start with who pays the most to the healthcare ecosystem. And that insurer is called the federal government through the state government.
That's starting to sound scary to me now, Philip.
I thought you might go there because then you added a whole bunch of people sitting on the Hill and a whole bunch of people who are going to have a great debate tonight who are all involved in trying to energize and hopefully come to some kind of agreement on how to move this thing forward. But, you know, they are the largest payer. They are the party that has the greatest risk. I mean, $30 billion in fraud that can be addressed by positive identification of a payment on an annualized basis means a lot of money to you and I in our taxes. Mm-hmm. So the one party that is in a position to actually save us, the citizen, money is the federal government. And again, I totally agree. It's scary. If we then move to private enterprise, we could sit there and go Anthem and others, United Healthcare, Kaiser Permanente, and the list goes on. Would they be willing to sit down at the same table and agree to develop something? And I sit there and go, what about the electronic patient record? Those are closed systems within singular health systems. And if you want to get your electronic patient record from one place to another, you have to assume that the two healthcare systems have agreed to collaborate on some of the standards that are right now emerging to allow that collaboration to occur. So, you know, can we get there? I think so. I think that it's going to take the will of Congress to get us there. And then it's going to take the willingness of the 50 states to be willing to work cooperatively to develop a coherent set of solutions. And we expect a new actor to walk into this already complex affair where we got, you know, Obamacare and who knows what other regulatory framework. I wish them luck, and maybe there is somebody who could do that.
This is interesting because $30 billion, that's a pretty big number. You know, that's a big motivator to try to solve a problem. And typically, as we've seen in, you know, lots of ecosystems, and clearly payments is one of them, there's often been some sort of trigger that has moved the industry to action. Target breach propelled EMV forward. You know, getting acceptance of debit. There were things that the networks did to incent the merchants to accept. So is this a regulatory initiative that will move this all forward? Is that the only incentive that we're lacking? Is that the only incentive that's possible to make a change?
Well, I mean, let's think a little bit about our government. And right now there is an act that has passed through the government, which is called the Medicare Access and CHIP, interesting, Reauthorization Act of 2015, that was sponsored by Representative Michael Burgess of Texas, which went into law on the 14th of April of this year. Buried in that act of Congress, is a requirement for the associated agencies to look at using a smart card as the means of identification. So Congress, who is supposed to represent us, the taxpayer, as opposed to us, the citizen, is sitting there and going, we have to do something. We know that positive identification, multi-factor authentication makes a lot of sense. So they're now looking to the administration, go out and figure out how to implement it. But then we've got the administration with all of its inherent challenges that we've got to figure out how to move. And we, as part of some of the work that we're doing with our competitors, we are actively lobbying the Hill to embrace and understand through things like the Smart Card Alliance, we are lobbying and working with through HIPAA. If you think about HIPAA 7 already describes mechanisms for multi-factor authentication. HIPAA already defines encryption standards and data privacy requirements. The challenge we've got right now, and if you think about payments, coming back to our corollary, PCI and the DSS, the data security standards that were defined, it's all about getting people to embrace, adopt, enforce, and maintain. So we know that one of Target's biggest problems is on that day, they were not 100% compliant with the concepts of encryption of data in transit. You know, we think about Anthem. They obviously were not compliant with the HIPAA standards at the moment of that breach. So compliance and responsibility on the part of enterprise, which bottom line means spending money, and from the government's perspective, we've never been really good at trying to save money by spending money. We tend to like to just continue to waste money. We've got that $30 billion, which is U.S. government expenditure, U.S. taxpayer expense, that is right now the catalyst that's got to drive the healthcare industry.
It's also enforcement, right? I mean, there has to be enforcement of the rules that exist, and maybe there isn't enough.
I totally agree that, like PCI, it was compliant on at a point in time. Enforcement, and you think about what President Obama tried to do when he was in Stanford in February for the cybersecurity summit, what he just did when we had the OPM attack, where he said, thou shalt implement what we told you to implement 10 years ago. It is that enforcement, it is that regulatory construct that's the real challenge that we got. I mean, we have the enabling technologies. You know, you and I could argue, should it be the cloud? Should it be tokenization? Should it be a smart card? Should it be the mobile device? The fact that we can argue about multiple opportunities to solve the problem means that this is not a technology challenge.
Right. I think that's a very, very good point. And so, I mean, there is such a complexity associated with healthcare because of all the state regulation, the government programs, and all the private insurance companies, and now the consumer that's absorbing a lot more of the healthcare expense than they've probably ever had to manage before, has a louder voice in all of this because it affects their pocketbook too. I want to, though, go back to the smart card. Got it. But it's, you know, for a smart card to work, there has to be hardware and other enabling infrastructure that allows that kind of technology to be effective. We've seen that struggle here, you know, in the U.S. with respect to payments and how long it just takes things to happen. Something on the scale of healthcare, how realistic is it for that to actually happen? And where does it start? Does it start with the government and the government program?
I think that's one place, but the other interesting place, and you bring up the fact that we, the patient, are going to have to bear much more of the cost of healthcare. So you have this funny intersect where healthcare and payments come together at certain points in the transaction. If the transaction is, please help me get better. There is this interesting synergy where I'm putting in payment terminals that are capable of communicating with a smart card, a smart telephone, a smartphone. Okay, so there's one point of intersect. So let's talk to Verifone and Ingenico and all of the system providers and the HPs and the NCRs and the IBMs and say to them, why don't we also add some kind of layer that allows us to communicate with a smart card that is now the health card. So part of that infrastructure can be synonymous. Does that cover all infrastructure? No. We still have doctors who like to take paper checks and like to keep paper notes that we're going to have to address as we move forward. We still have citizens that still don't understand how to remember their PIN or use the ATM. So we do have that educational gap that we've got to address. But so there is one place for synergy. And I think the fact that you and I are talking in payments.com about healthcare means that we recognize that between healthcare and payments, there is a need for cooperation. And one of the cooperation is at the technical level.
So you bring up a good point, and that is the mobile device. So is the mobile device the unifier? And is that the way we move things forward? And recognizing that, like payments, merchants still accept cash and checks if they're forced to, but they really are looking to the future. Should we be thinking about designing a healthcare payments, healthcare data protection strategy that really is centered around the mobile device?
We have nothing against using the mobile device. As you know, Karen, we provide, for example, Pearl, which is a secure element that is integrated into mobile devices to create that secret storage place. That thing that creates the security that's essential to the transaction. And it's the same thing that we put into a card. It's the same thing that we will put into IoT devices in the M revolution. So moving to the mobile form factor, we embrace. We believe that that's a great way to move this thing forward because we get the advantage of it is the consumer's device, so it's singular. We get the advantage. We can embed a secure element in it at an affordable price. If you think about a $700 phone, if we got to add a $10 to put a secure element, that kind of disappears in the detail. We now need to create the overlay, which says how, like, if we think about Apple Pay, where Apple Pay and Visa and MasterCard and ourselves and others have gone and built this TSP, this token service provision capability, which is all about creating the security using cryptography, using the EMV standard, which can, giving it a different acronym, and is being used by the government, where we put PIV, the government security standard, into a mobile device. So we have the card, we have the mobile device. You think about the passport, it's got the same security architecture using the same physical interface, that RF component, that cloud capability, to use the secure element. So yes, the mobile device with the secure element inside creates that framework that allows us to create that secure identity. You may say, what protocol? And we could say NFC, yes. We could say BLE, yes. We could say Wi-Fi, yes. We could say over the cellular mobile network, yes. We've got multiple communications capabilities with standards and protocols that exist that can be embraced. The question is, who's going to say we need to do this together?
So who is going to say that?
Comes back to, you know, where do we go with HR 2 coming out of the U.S. government? Where do we go with AMA and what they're doing as the American Medical Association and what they're doing to standardize things like procedure codes? What are we doing with HIPAA and the evolution of it? What are we doing with the electronic patient record and the evolution of it? You know, there are lots of standards efforts in process, but I think what we, and I look to Overture, I look to payments.com, I look to what we're doing with the identity tracker, we need to help people understand that the only way to fix the problem is to work together.
Yep.
Now, doing this independently means we're going to compete for a standard, and competing for standards never worked.
So let me ask you a question. So where's the house on fire? You know, because there are so many places to start. And you talk about authenticating the consumer, yet, as I said earlier, there are zillions of records there. So where do you start? Where's the house burning down?
I think the house is burning down at the enterprise level. And I'll use it, for example, we are working with a Florida health system. And they will be requiring their employees to use a smart card to physically access the building and any secure areas and to logically log on to the network. And that's not the patient. We're talking about the employee, the doctor. And if you think about Target, you think about Anthem, it's not the consumer that's stealing the data. It's the hacker who's resembling an employee.
Yep.
The place to start, just like the government with OPM, it's you employees of the U.S. government, you shall use your ID card that has the security.
Yep.
You shall insert it into. So we now need to go to the Anthems and the United Health Systems and the U.S. government and the Veterans Administration and say, please protect the enterprise because that's where the data is stored.
I think that makes a lot of sense and seems easier. I mean, not that any of this is easy. It just seems easier to affect because you can hold the enterprise accountable. They feel the pain. And anything, as we know, that faces the consumer is a hairball because getting consumers to buy into anything different is challenging. But the enterprise, I think that's a logical place to start. Makes sense to me.
Right. And then you think about the enterprise, if the doctor has to insert his doctor ID card or tap his doctor ID phone to his device, we've begun to build the infrastructure that now can be used by the patient.
That does seem it's the thing that kicks open the door. It's the crack that opens the door.
Absolutely. And maybe, you know, you think about PCI. PCI came before EMV. But the one thing PCI did not address is how do I secure access to to the system. They addressed mm-hmm. the data, but they did not address access to the system with a strong method for authentication. Username, password was good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, because we are talking ID and we are coming off of this from the identity tracker, the other thing that's happening in the marketplace is what's called bring your own identity. And part of bring your own identity begs the question, what is the thing the person is going to use to authenticate themselves? And I love the idea of the mobile phone with the secure element inside, that I can say to somebody, I'm holding my secure mobile phone and you've proofed that I am who I claim to be. Every time I present this, know it's me. And if you mm-hmm. add Touch ID, you can really know it's me and not somebody who stole my device.
Well, this is a fascinating conversation. I think what I've taken away from this is if we think payments and financial services is complicated, healthcare is so much more complicated given the number of players, as you point out, also given the sensitivity of the data. I think one of the things that we didn't touch on is in payments, yeah, there's an account number that can be compromised, and no consumer wants that to happen, but they feel as though their bank has their back, shuts down the account, refunds money, gives them a new account. When your medical records, your personal information has been compromised, that feels very different, and there is no process or mechanism for making that right. You only have one social security number. So there's a lot more at stake, and I think it feels much more personal to the individual, which makes, I think, the stakes appear to be much, much higher, the problem much more complicated to solve.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Anthem is my insurance company, and when the Anthem attack happened, it was the first time as somebody who's been around security that I actually felt personally threatened. Lose my payment card, so what? I call the bank and get it fixed, and okay, I'm going to have to argue for a while. But lose my personal information, my address, my social security number, my salary, the claims that I've had, my medical history. And I sit there and kind of go, that's personal. And you think about what happened with the OPM and the fact mm-hmm. that the U.S. government has allocated $500 million to address identity theft associated with that particular attack. Maybe
wow.
that $500 million would have been better spent implementing what the president after 9/11 required. It would have been a better use of money in that $30 billion that the Medicare system is losing. If we spend five to begin to address it, that's money well spent and will save you and I each month or each week or each other week a fair amount of money. You divide, $30 billion by 115 million households, and that was a big number.
That is a big number. Well, thank you very much for a fascinating conversation. There's a lot that can be done, a lot that's being done, and a lot of solutions that I hope people listening and reading this will walk away and say, we can do something now. We don't have to wait for everyone to come together to solve all these problems. There are things on the enterprise side that can be implemented quickly with an infrastructure that is available today and can work and can protect all of us in the process. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure, Karen.